You know Chelsea lose.
Yeah, phone's over there. I'll pull it next to me.
A question for you, Ty. Would you rather Arsenal get top four about or five go minutes on behind a romantic else. Weekend to Venice with Wenger?
No, Charlie, don't ask those. Charlie, don't read out those questions. Don't read out those questions. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. Charlie, no, seriously, don't read those questions.
That's yours, is it?
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Hello and welcome to the NCC Podcast. My name is Cosmo and tonight I'm joined by Glenn.
Yo.
Joined by Eddie.
Good evening.
And later on we hope to be joined by Jed. He didn't watch the Leicester game, but he says he's going to come on to help discuss our search for a new manager later on. But boys, that Leicester game, qualification for Europa Conference League. Big result, no? How are you feeling about being in the Europa Conference?
I'm so excited. I'm excited for my team, for the players, because at least at some of the stadiums, they don't even have to go from airport to training ground. They can just go from airport to pitch.
Mate, I was loving
that's
that.
I was saying to my brother. I said, oh, they don't even have to go to the away locker room to get changed. They just get changed on the plane.
Yeah. For context, for those that haven't seen it, I think there's a team that plays in like Armenia or somewhere who've qualified for the Europa Conference League, and they play literally next to an airport. You can see the planes flying in and landing. And on an AstroTurf pitch, like it literally looks like your local 3G, not even Power League. We're talking about pre-3G era. This is like
Stan.
Just carpet, bright green carpet, concrete underneath, Astro burns. Like that's going to be us next season. But to be honest, I was very excited by that game. I thought that was a great way to end the season. I know it's been an absolutely miserable season, but that was an exciting match, obviously, because Leicester had so much to play for. I think that kind of fed into it. And it had a bit of like an FA Cup atmosphere in a way, like both teams were really going for it. And I think from early on, like you could see that Spurs were motivated. Like some of the tackles we were putting in early on, I actually thought we played quite well. Glenn, what did you make of it?
It was a weird one because I think I was just so emotionally detached from the game, having had the week we've had with obviously losing last week and then Kane coming out and saying that, well, he's not saying, but reports coming out that Kane wants to leave and all this. I was just so emotionally detached from the game. And I felt that it was like Leicester's game to lose. I thought we're not really fighting for that much. They're looking at either Champions League or Europa League, which would be massive for them. Like Champions League would have been massive for them. But I thought it was theirs to lose. And I thought our only chance of really getting a good result was to score early. I thought if we didn't score early, we were done. Like they would just control the game. Like they would see it out, but obviously they couldn't. Yeah, I was just so done with what I was even thinking about not watching Spurs, which I never do. I always watch the game, but I was just so emotionally detached from Spurs at the moment. We haven't got a full-time manager. Our best player's leaving. It's just all a bit.
Actually wanted us to lose the game, right? Like a few of our fans said that. Eddie, you were watching it with your brother who supports Chelsea, for those that don't know, and he was basically relying on Tottenham winning because they were losing to get into the Champions League. So I was wondering how that felt for you. Were you kind of like willing Spurs to lose at all? Or did you want to win that game? Like, did you want to finish above? Was finishing above Arsenal and getting into the Europa Conference like more important than losing, finishing below Arsenal and avoiding the Europa Conference?
I think the all important question is like, how much do you value like the end to the season compared to the season that we've had? Like in terms of emotional attachment, I'm similar to Glenn in the sense of like by the time this game came around, I was like barely excited for it because essentially if we win, we're in conference. If we lose and Arsenal lose, we're in conference. The only way we're not in conference then is if we lose and Arsenal win. But that means Chelsea win, then they get into the Champions League and Leicester miss out. There's just a lot of things that I didn't care about specifically happening around loads of this game. But having the experience of watching the Chelsea, we had the games on simultaneously, the Chelsea game and the Spurs game. And it was just funny for me, to be honest. I just got a lot of humour out of it because with the Chelsea game, they were just missing a lot of opportunities. And then Vardy, I mean, we give away, we'll talk about defensive performance overall, let's say. But we give away a cheap penalty and Vardy puts it away. And then suddenly this game is like, it's high-end drama. It's Leicester getting into the Champions League, Chelsea crashing out because they've just gone 1-0 down as well. And it was an entertaining game because literally Tottenham had the opportunity to put one team into the Champions League, I personally didn't have any emotional attachment to the result, but I'm glad that in arguably our worst season since Sherwood, we're still finishing above Arsenal, and it just goes to show that like it really means nothing. Like finishing above Arsenal really means nothing to me because Arsenal are not where we want to be competing. They're so far removed from where we are as a club at the moment, and they'll talk about history and they'll talk about Mickey Mouse Cups, but as a club they're just nowhere near what we want to be competing for. So even though we finish above Arsenal, I still think it's a pretty dismal end to the season, even though the game was entertaining.
On the point of like having the power of deciding who got into the top four, like I know a lot of Spurs fans were upset that us winning allowed Chelsea in and Liverpool in, but I actually think, like thinking about it from like a purely power perspective, it probably is better that we've kept Leicester out. Because Chelsea have so much resources. If they're not in the Champions League, they can still like attract big players. Whereas Leicester are similar to us in terms of resources, in terms of like they've just built that new training centre. They've got a decent squad, decent manager, similar size wage bill. So if they get in the Champions League, all of a sudden, they're probably eating at a separate table to us a little bit in terms of attracting players. If we're going for the same player, say someone like Tielemans, say there was someone similar of his ilk. I only use him as an example because we also went for him back in the day. But if they can say we have Champions League and we're just saying, oh, right, well, we're in Europa Conference, we're building towards getting back into the Champions League, like they have a huge advantage over us for like a few years. So even though short-term pain, like allowing Chelsea into the top four, I think from a pure like power point of view, it's probably better that we've kept Leicester out. What do you guys think of that?
I think it's a very like complex point, and I think a lot of Spurs fans are just not going to feel the same way. I think a lot of Spurs fans are going to feel like we've offered a leg up to Chelsea into the top four, where they would do the opposite to us. Like we've seen that happen when Leicester won the league. And look, that's I suppose a different situation, even though it features the same three teams. But I think I agree very much so that Tottenham are in a very precarious position as a club because City, United, Chelsea and Liverpool are again like moving the goalposts, because Tottenham have moved their way into that conversation in terms of consistently getting Champions League football, consistently being in the top four, consistently finishing above quite a few of those teams, apart from City really. And now that they're kind of pulling away again, you're talking about Liverpool winning Champions League and then winning the league, then you talk about Chelsea now in the Champions League final, who have as good a chance as any to win the Champions League. They're in the Champions League next season. United having a very having a stranglehold on that foot in being in the top four, and they're in the Europa League final. They're starting to move away, and we're in a very precarious position where West Ham are showing signs of becoming a better club. Leicester are showing signs of becoming a better club. We're talking off air about Everton potentially building into a better club. Villa's resurgence into the league and finishing you know, fairly well this season. It's a very precarious position. And I'm not even talking about Arsenal. It's in a similarly precarious position, probably worse so than us. But, you know, there's a lot of teams vying for the Tottenham spot, I would say. And I agree, in terms of positional power, in terms of club power, it's probably best for us that Leicester didn't get in. But again, for some reason, we're the fairy tale villains in their story, which probably leads to why there was some, let's say, odd fan reactions to us on the weekend.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, this is a point which, well, I was like banging the drum in the group chat. I think out of everyone in the group chat, I was like most up for this game. I think that's because I know a few Leicester fans are still, I think because I know a few Leicester fans, I think it means that I bear more of a grudge for the 2015-16 season than most people, because honestly, they're so desperate to build a rivalry with us. Like, they've got like their Midlands rivals, but for some reason they don't really prioritise them. They've got this weird beef with Tottenham. And honestly, it reminds me of like when Stoke City hated Danny Rose. Do you remember when they would just boo Danny Rose like every time we played them for like no reason? Because he like apparently dived against them once. But like, as soon as the teams came out and they booed our players coming onto the pitch, like my sort of like aggression levels and the amount I wanted to win that game like went up by 100 times, because who does that? Like, even in Spurs v Arsenal, I don't think booing Arsenal walking onto the pitch is like normal behavior for fans. It just kind of like, it really rubbed me up the wrong way, and it continued throughout the game. So like, we were talking about off air when Reguilón took a corner and they were booing him. And you're just thinking, what is this about? Like, I couldn't understand it at all. And then the whole thing of them with the clappers and Vardy, in my opinion, being a complete cheat. I don't want to sound too much like Ty from AFTV, but...
I hope Leicester get relegated.
Yeah, no, I probably do, to be honest.
Vardy, you're a cheat, and I hope Leicester get relegated.
I probably do, because on that penalty for the second goal, that is probably, it's not even dark arts, because it's the most blatant, it's not even a dive. I don't even know what it is. Like, grabs Sanchez's arm and then falls to the floor, and then VAR don't even check whether it's a foul. They check whether it's in the box or not. I'm sorry, but that's just another nail
rubbish
for VAR.
Yeah, it was complete rubbish. So the first penalty, I thought Vardy's bought the penalty. Because he's seen the outstretched leg and he's gone over it. It's fine. That's a pen. Stonewall penalty for me. Dark art, but fine. Don't mind it. Second penalty, you can't even call it simulation.
Exactly. It's its own genre. It's its own genre.
Yeah. It's like a simulation inside of a simulation. He's not even been grabbed. He's grabbed the person, which itself is simulation. And then fallen over by grabbing the person, which is simulation inside of a simulation. So it's on its own matrix rubbish. Honestly, I swear on my life. I was looking at it like, first of all, how is he giving it? The ref. He's got a decent view of it. And then VAR, possible penalty check. I see them draw, like, looking at the line. I'm thinking, why are they looking
at it? They're looking at a foul.
We get a replay on the TV of, like, the foul, in inverted commas. And then you just see possible foul check. And they're just looking at where the foul, in inverted commas, took place. I'm thinking, surely they're going to check this. And then he just blows and points to the spot. I lost my head. At that point, I wanted to win the game. That was the point. I wanted to win the game. Before that, I didn't care. I was like, "Oh, it's one, always fine." Like, I'm quite happy. Like, well, that would do. Arsenal weren't winning at this point. So we were finishing above them. That's big for me. I don't care about the Europa Conference League. Finish above Arsenal, that's the main thing. And then I saw Vardy go down like that. I was like, fuck this. I'm not having that. I'm not having this goal win this game. That is the biggest load of bollocks I've seen this year. I've seen some terrible decisions.
It became a crusade at that point. It became about justice. It was more than just football. And I felt so bad for Sanchez, man, because...
Oh, my God.
Guy Sports were so biased, yeah? They were basically calling Sanchez an idiot for being... For being pulled down, I was thinking that, like, they were like, this is
for typical. Being grabbed.
Yeah, they were like, this is typical
that's
this
cute.
Season.
That's cute from Vardy.
No, they didn't even say it was cute. The cute didn't even come out of their mouth. They were like, Sanchez, well, you know, he's given the ref a decision to make. He's given the ref a decision to make. What? By having his hand held and dropping to the floor. And then, I'm not going to lie, like, Sanchez, yeah, I'm in the section of fans that probably if the right offer comes in, I would sell him. But I thought he had a quality game after that. The way he recovered from that was really
even
good.
Even before, the blocks that he was putting in, he's always been good at this, like blocking shots and sort of like being in the right place. But what he's not good at is just sorting out his feet.
Yeah.
Like whenever Vardy got put through, I thought the penalty waiting to happen.
That's the issue. I think Sanchez done really well when it came to tackling, blocking, getting in the right positions to be effective. But whenever the ball went round the corner, whenever the ball went over the top, it genuinely looked like Vardy got him on toast. And the thing is, like, you're essentially watching two different games. You're watching a game where Vardy does toy with Sanchez the whole game. But also, you look at the game in another sense and like, well, he did, but also... The only two goals that they scored were penalties. So can you say that Sanchez was being dragged around all game? Not really, because the fact of the matter is, aside from the two penalties, he was in the right position most of the time to put in a good few challenges. He had a tough game, but I didn't think he came out of it looking worse for wear. I just think he had a good battle. And the only issue with it is that Vardy has been dreadful like for a while now. And Sanchez, or rather not just Sanchez, but our whole defence, made him look like he was 2016 Vardy all over again. Yeah. And that's a question for another time. We are a team that allow Joe Linton to score every season. That's the benchmark. I think Sanchez did have a good game and he needed to come in because I really hope we've seen the last of Dier in the Tottenham shirt, but yeah, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and then leading on to like what Sanchez did in his kind of like recovery, his revenant journey, like I thought he headed in that equaliser. Honestly, I was like running around my room. I was like gassed. I was so happy for him specifically because you could just see how much it hurt him, like the blatant cheat like that was like done to him, like you could see that he was so angry about that. And then when I thought he nodded in that goal, I was so gassed for him. But it was almost better that it was Schmeichel scoring their own goal. And not only that, after he concedes that own goal, he's absolutely berating the referee. The whole Leicester team are berating the referee, saying it's a foul. And then on Match of the Day, in the interview after, he's still claiming it was a foul on him. Watch the replay. He punches Sanchez in the face and then his arm deflects it into his own net. Where is the foul there? Like,
apparently defenders, or not even defenders, no one can compete when the goalkeeper jumps, apparently. Mm. That's how goalkeepers act now. Like, as soon as someone competes with them in the air, it's a foul. And the thing is, we may as well just have uncontested jumps if that is. Because I understand goalkeepers need to be protected because you know, injuries can be very, very different for goalkeepers. They're not going to get tackled, but they can get clattered whilst they're in midair. But when you're jumping for a corner and you're weak, like Schmeichel was, you can't complain if the ball that he completely mishits the punch. It comes off his it comes off his forearm into the goal. It's not a foul. It's bad goalkeeping. And he got nutmegged for the Harry Kane goal. So I think he was hoping the foul would save his blushes, really.
Let's talk about the lead up to the winner and the fourth goal. So when did Dele and Bergwijn come off? Was it still at 2-1 or was it 2-2 when that happened?
Yeah, it was at 2-1.
At 2-1, because I think Dele has been quite good since he's come back into the team. And I feel like most of all, he has been trying. But I did see people making the point that, like, we looked a lot better with Lucas in the 10. And Bale's the one who's, like, taken all the plaudits, ultimately. But do you guys think that's, like, a slight on Dele at all? The fact that Lucas comes on and we play a lot better?
Who else did we take off?
It was Bergwijn and Dele off, and Bale and Lucas on.
Didn't Winks come off as well?
No, sadly not.
I don't think he came off.
Winks.
Rodon came on for.
Oh yeah.
Son.
In the last 10 minutes.
Son. I thought Dele was probably of the players that were on the pitch for the first 60 minutes. He was our brightest player. So I don't think that him coming off led to like a better performance. I just think more so Bale and Lucas coming on, because they were sort of like a bit more of like a bright spark, where Lucas is a bit more nippy, he's a bit more like sort of energetic, and Bale, obviously the quality he has, he kind of showed. But yeah, I think it was more like a change of like type of midfielder rather than a change of quality of midfielder, because Dele looked good. When he's been looking good since Mason's put him in the team. I think he's really had like a positive end to the season, where he can look forward and actually think, I could easily be a part of this first team next year. Depending on the manager, obviously, and what he thinks of him. But I think it was more of a change of type of player than like more than Dele having a poor game or Lucas having a great game.
I think that's a good point.
I also think that Lucas coming on as the Chaos 10 that we called him earlier on in the season worked, because if we're talking about how tactically the game played out, Leicester for some reason or another just refused to press in the midfield, and that left like a cavernous space for like players to run into. And personally for me, I always think Dele works best when he has to make decisions quickly, because when he has too much time on the ball, he usually tries something that's a lot more difficult than maybe keeping the ball moving. Whereas when he has to make a decision quick, his flicks and his ingenuity in those positions often carve out chances. Like, we don't get into the Champions League final unless he flicks it on. And that's where Dele's best. And so I think the reason why him coming off and Lucas coming on seems like it was better for the team was simply because Leicester didn't press. So when Lucas came on and he was attacking that space, those midfielders didn't know what to do, and they fouled a lot, and they gave away cheap free kicks, and they gave away the ball because he was nipping at the heels. And like Glenn said, it's just a different type of presence in the middle of the park. And I think, like you said, Glenn, I think Dele was bright. He's been bright, as both of you said, since Mason's come in. I think what he needs to get back into his game is just that slight against him, that he just doesn't look as sharp as he did when he was playing, you know, 30, 40 games a season. And he's been open and honest about that he's been the most difficult season of his career. But I definitely think we'll see a maturity in his game, if he continues to play in the Spurs team, and I think he's still got a lot to give. And I think now, funnily enough, he probably will end up being more of an attacking midfielder, because we feared when he was coming through the Spurs team that he's only really effective as a second striker. But I think if he matures his game, then I can very much see him being quite influential in that attacking midfielder position.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
He put in that unbelievable cross for Son in the first half, where Son decided to pass the ball in the middle of the 6-yard box. It was an unbelievable ball. I forgot that even happened up until like I finished my point there. And I think he really has that final ball down. And I think when he gets his goals back in him, when he's sort of like finding, like, he was always really good at arriving in the right areas. But I think when he finds that again and sort of just finishes them chances, he's going to be on fire again, I think. If he gets the chance.
Yeah, and Bale, of course, the other substitute, getting the two goals to win the game. I kind of think Gareth Bale's always been a bit like this, even when he was quality. Like, he's always one of those players where you have to give him a lot of chances, because even though he's world class, sometimes he does stuff which is just like, you're like, what are you doing? Like, some of his touches when he first came on were so wayward. Days. I was in my head.
It would end up being a pass to Doherty.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking, oh my God, like, maybe he really is finished. Like, maybe he actually is going to retire. And then you watch the highlights, and this is what people say. He is a bit of a moments player, especially these days. Oh my God. When I watched the highlights back on Match of the Day, for the third goal, in the lead up to it, when Bale gets it on the halfway line, just running in his pomp, puts an unbelievable pass in for Son. And I was just in awe of his quality. Like, I think a lot of people have said it. I think one of the great shames of this season is that we haven't been able to dine out on Bale nostalgia, because he's shown his quality and he has the best goal or assist ratio in the Premier League by far. Like, I think he's like way over a goal a game. I think he's at like at least 1.5.
I would maybe say first or second, maybe Kelechi and Acho's top.
I think it's Bale, but I think per minute is Bale, because obviously Bale has had 20 appearances. For Spurs,
yeah.
But a lot of them are 10-minute cameos under Mourinho, like where we've like thrown the sink here, where we're maybe losing. Well, where we maybe like have
Glenn, I just saw you got taken back in like a Vietnam flashback, thinking of the Mourinho game.
You know what game I think you got flashback to? West Ham.
It was West Ham. It was West Ham where they've just sort of like lost the game in the second half, and he's like, oh, I'll bring on Bale because he'll bring something in the last 5 minutes. Like, these are what the 20 appearances have given up. Like, these 5-10 minute appearances under Mourinho, and then recently he's been playing minutes and he scores.
Shock.
I think the one issue with Bale, and I think this will decide whether a new manager keeps him or not, like, it depends on so much. I think Bale with Kane and Son, I think they're all basically strikers. I think that's the issue.
Yeah.
They're not, none of them are going to track back enough to be able to play them all together. And yet, he has the best goal-to-game ratio. Like, you literally can't argue with the stats. Like, they're insane. So, how do you find a way for that to work? Like, do you think need to... Yeah. I think, no, but that's a good point. I think if Kane does go, we have to get Bale in, like, not permanently, but we have to get him in for another season at least, because we have to replace Kane's goals and we're going to need all the help we can get with that. But yeah, like, what do you guys think? I think it kind of depends on the type of manager we get. I think if we get someone like a Ranić, maybe he won't fancy Bale, because we're going to essentially be gegenpressing, and I can't imagine Bale doing that, to be honest. But maybe with Ten Hag, maybe with, I don't know about Potter even, but it would just be good just to have him as an option off the bench even. What do you guys think?
You have to think that Ten Hag essentially revived
Tadic,
exactly. And Tadic was a winger at Southampton, and he revived him as a striker essentially at Ajax. So I think quality for Ten Hag, as long as he has the quality, you can be in a Ten Hag side. So I think maybe potentially Ten Hag might be interested in someone like Bale, who inherently has just a lot of quality on the ball. I honestly think,
Eddie, you honestly think something. We got cut off by Zoom. What were you saying?
Yeah, so I was actually making a point. It's a perfect way for Jed to come in part two of the chat. What I was trying to say is that I honestly think part of what's going to be important for our attacking returns next season is someone like Steven Bergwijn. Is a person that like someone like Ranić comes in. The usage of Bergwijn is going to be essential because I think he's got so much talent to give. And, you know, we've got a lot of space for players in that in those wing positions. Son, Bell, Bergwijn, if we can't hold on to Lucas. You know, if Ryan Sessegnon comes in as a left back, there's a lot of things to play for in those positions. And I think Bergwijn's going to be an option. And I think we need to, he's essential to keep. He just hasn't been in the goals this season, which is a real disappointment.
Mm. Jed, welcome to the pod, by the way. We were just discussing whether we would keep Bale or not next season. But we were both, we were all saying it kind of depends on the manager. But just wondering what your take is on it.
No, yeah, I'd agree, to be honest. It just depends on what manager comes in and how they're going to play. I think, going back to Bergwijn, I think Eddie's completely right. I think he's got so much more to offer us than I think people realise. I think people who are writing him off already are harsh. It's harsh. Like, he's been essentially, like, when under his time under Mourinho, he was basically playing as a right-back and literally just a right-back.
Yeah,
and having to then try and get up the pitch the other end and try and help us create something. And his confidence has been shot. You can see it. You can see when he was playing, he was lacking that assertiveness. There was one Europa League game, I remember. He was just shooting from anywhere just to try and get a goal. And he just needed that goal, and he got it against Villa. And what you see in that goal is what he's going to give you. He's got that determination. He's strong. He's quick. He just bounces off of players. And then the finish at the end of it, I think that's the problem as well. He hasn't really had many clear-cut chances apart from the Liverpool game. Apart from that, he hasn't had many clear-cut chances. So you see, when he does get in front of goal, he can finish. So yeah, going forward, I think if we aren't going to get Bell back next season, I think he could really make that right-wing position his own.
I was wondering if you guys would keep Lucas as well, because I do see some people saying, like, maybe to raise funds, we would maybe sell him, but I thought he was class yesterday against Leicester.
I think he's a chaos player, isn't he? And I know we keep saying it. He does have his own technical, prowess. I'm not saying he doesn't, you know, that cliche, even he doesn't know what he's doing. No, he's very much in... You know, he has an idea of what he wants to do with the ball. It's just, he's very much it's like a live wire, very much like an instinctive player in terms of he'll run into those tight areas and he'll think to himself, I'm going to try and make something out of this. Like, he'll put midfielders and defenders in uncomfortable positions, and usually it's you know, you either crowd him out or he might lose control of the ball. But, I think he still is an asset at 28. I think he's 28 now or 29. At that age, he's still an asset. And, like, he's in that position where, like, you can afford to sell him and raise funds. Like, it's not a situation where, like, we're essentially getting what we can get for him. Like, I think we can still sell him for a decent sum of 20, 25 million. And that can go into some fundraising, but I like Lucas. Like, I know we banter him a bit, but he just seems like a good person to have in the camp. Like, there's nothing really offensive about him apart from maybe support Precious for him.
Yeah. quite offensive, to be fair. But apart from that, he's
speaking, if politics aside, I think. He just seems like there's no reason why we should sell him sooner than selling like nine other players.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot ahead of him in terms of like chopping the deadwood. One of them being Lamella, I think. But there was one crazy Lucas moment. It was so typical of Lucas, like in the dying moments of that Leicester game. Eddie, I think you already know what I'm talking about. He's just sprinting up the field and does the most outrageous roulette as if it was like playground football.
Like, well, you know what, no, I saw that bit. I saw.
Did you see it?
Because I put like the last 5 minutes of the game, and I was thinking, "What is this guy doing, man?"
This is how he convinced so many people that he was a prospect in the Brazilian league. Because like you go to his YouTube, it's just all the ones of those roulettes that have just come off, just put into a compilation, like
with some Euro pop.
Yeah. Well,
no, you're right though, Eddie. I think he's a sorry, Cosmo. I think he's a very good squad player to have, and we've seen that he likes stat padding in Europe as well. So obviously, when we're going into the Europa Conference, it's going to be
him good. And his boy Vinicius, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we should bring Vinicius back just for the Europa Conference.
Can you imagine that celebration in an airport? I wouldn't have it.
In that strip of grass in between the runways, that's what we're going to
do. Yeah, but I'm in the airport hangar doing up this. I couldn't have it.
As well, I think he's one of those players that like every manager is going to like because he has got that technical ability. He's a good finisher as well. But most importantly, he's going to work hard for the team. And I think for a new manager coming in, apart from maybe Ten Hag, I think they'll love having someone like Lucas.
Yeah, one of the talking points at the end of the Leicester game as well was the whole Harry Kane saying his goodbyes. I don't know what you guys thought of this. It was like a lot of players hugging him at the end of the match. I honestly, my first thought was that they were just congratulating him on the golden boot. But you guys in the chat were saying otherwise.
That hug was looking a bit too long for me, I can't lie. That was some long hug, especially as a group hug as well. Like.
No, but they can just do that in the training ground or wherever. Like, why do they need to do it in front of the cameras? Yeah, is this part of like Kane's ploy to get out of the club? Like, has he like bribed them to say goodbye on the pitch? Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
On the pitch. It's the final day of the season. I think.
Yeah.
As much as like it's gonna lead to rampant speculation, I kind of agree with Cosmo in the sense that like it's just you congratulate your whole team for like getting through the season. It's not just about where you finish. Like it's been a difficult season for everyone involved. It's been a difficult season for Delhi. It's been a difficult season for Spurs as a club. I think those three players have seen it all together. Really, they were there at the highs of the Poch era. They've been there like when we were crashing and burning under Poch and under Mourinho. And I think, yeah, this season's just been an emotional roller coaster. And look, there's no denying that there's a lot of emotion surrounding the decision for Kane to leave or stay. But he just won Golden Boot and got whatever best playmaker of the season. So despite, you know, that kind of tumultuous cascade of just rubbish that this season has been, Kane has been brilliant as on the pitch. And so, yeah, I think congratulating him, giving him some love happens on the football pitch on the final day of the season.
What made it a little bit suspect for me was the Kane's wife's Instagram post. I mean it.
Glenn's IPK, man. Do you not know it?
Yeah. No. Like, he's following
Kate Kane.
Yeah, she put a post that like, it was on a lot of Spurs Twitter. Pardon me. So she basically added all three of them and then put like three crying faces afterwards.
Then you're coming like one of those brothers who checked the roof of the taxi for new signings or something. The trees in the background.
The private planes flying into Luton Airport.
Yeah.
To be fair, Team Kane are just trying to get him out of the club, man. His brother, his wife, like they're all trying to help that. But I don't know. I was wondering where you guys are at with Kane now, because obviously when we recorded that last pod, the news had just dropped. You know, we've played two games since then, since the transfer request or apparent transfer request. Like, what do you guys think we should do with him?
Well, I dropped the worst aged tweet of the year yesterday, so I'm going to excuse myself. You guys can talk about it for now.
I think with the right offer, we can let him go. I think Jed will agree with that. I think that's that would be Jed's stance.
No, I'm sort of coming around to that now, to be honest. I think, well, I said it last week, there's no point having someone who doesn't want to be here. Not that I think Kane would down tools, because ultimately Kane's probably one of the most professional players you're going to come across. And I think if he was to stay at Tottenham, it's not like he would not be bothered. He would still be giving everything for the club. But I think me personally, take the money, use it to sort of restructure the club, get a director of football in, and just give them the keys to the workman, because now it feels like now or never for Spurs, to be honest. We really need to get a new appointment right. And there's a lot of good talent to be had out there. I think you just look at the state of the French League at the moment. You can go to the French League, get 2 to 3 very good players for even like half of the money you're going to get for Kane, and just reinvest it for positions that we desperately need in the squad. We need a new right back. We need 2 new centre backs. We probably need a creative midfielder. We need a backup striker. So there's a lot of work to do in the summer. And to be honest, selling Kane would probably help us massively for reshaping the squad and restructuring the club as a whole.
What would you guys like, Jed, what would you set? What's the right price for Kane, do you think?
I think 150 for abroad. I think if he's going England, I would say 175 personally. Maybe rise into 200, but
yeah, I'm similar. I think we should do what like Dortmund did with Sancho and like set a price that's quite high. So I think like 180, and then say like to clubs, like if you don't like give us a bid of 180 by this certain cut off, then he's just not for sale. That's what I would like us to do.
We need to have it done.
Oh, well, your mic. I can't hear you. The mic has just dropped out.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Sorry. We as Spurs, we need to have this sorted as soon as possible. This isn't something we want lingering on for the whole of the summer. If he's going to go, he has to go within the next month for me. But we have to, if we're going to sell him, we have to do it early. Otherwise, don't do it at all, because we won't have enough time to bring the players in that we need to bring in. And it will just end up being a disaster.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. Like, if we're selling abroad, 150 million is a good price for Kane. If we're selling to someone who we're directly competing against, like, there's no amount of money that would be too high for me. Like, obviously not insane amounts, but like if we were like 175 minimum, like can anyone really complain? Like he is the biggest asset that the club has ever had, in my opinion. And he is essential to the club at the moment. So it's literally like selling De Bruyne for City. It's like selling, you know, there's so many examples that I can use. It's like selling Messi for Barcelona, stuff like that. He's the heart of the team, and if you're going to try and prize him away, especially another Premier League team or Premier League rival, like you have to be willing to spend obscene money, in my opinion, because it's an obscene thing to want, I guess.
Did you notice him in his Gary Neville interview trying to lowball himself when he was like, if an offer of 100 million comes in, maybe we could talk? I'm thinking that is so ridiculous. Like, Jack Grealish would go for like 100 million. he's probably the best player in the league. Like, in my opinion, like 180 is still quite low considering his contract.
I think Levy's thinking if we get 120 or 100 for abroad and then 150 max for Premier League, because no one in the Premier League is going to be able to afford more than 150 mil for Kane. Kane is a player injured regularly every year. He's a player that's not at the end of his career, but he's not Haaland. He's not a 10-year investment. He's probably like a 5-year investment before he starts going on a massive decline.
Yeah, but look how much Hazard went for. The guy was 28 years old. And then look how much he went for to Real Madrid. Like,
and he only had a year in his contract as well.
Clubs are willing to spend money for talent. It's a proven fact.
Look where Real Madrid's financial status is now. Look how in the mud they are now.
Like, they can't afford to do it. Exactly. But clubs are
going to learn from that, Eddie. Like, clubs in the Premier League aren't as stupid as like Real Madrid and Barcelona to put themselves in the pits. Like, the only club that I could see maybe offering 150 for Kane in the Prem is Man United.
Yeah, Man United. Not City. I reckon it'd be United.
I don't think City would offer.
City have never spent that much money on one player.
Man City would rather spend the money on Haaland because he's got like a story with City as well. Because Dad used to play for them. They can like brand him as a City fan. He's like got loads of years ahead of him. Mm. Like, they can nurture him. Like, they're not spending 150 on Kane. If they get Kane at a good price, I think they'll go for him. Like, 120 probably maximum for City.
It's like haggling that when you go abroad.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. But this is about Harry Kane. You can't go up to Tottenham and say, "What's your best price?" Like, that's just outrageous. Our best price is 200 million.
I've got this amount of money. What's the best price that you can give me?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like that meme of that guy said, "I got 50p, now fuck off." When you sit at that red, like, it's exactly like that.
That's not good, my brother.
150, but 200 for you, my boss man.
But surely, Glenn, 120 to 150 is just not worth it from our perspective. I would rather just keep him if he's unhappy for that money.
That's a question for Levy. That's not a question for me.
I'm worried about teams trying to offer us their Deadwood and us being tempted by it.
Yeah.
I'm worried. See, I can see City doing something like 80 plus Ake and Jesus or something.
Yeah.
And for me,
oh my God. That would kill me. That would kill me.
Not
I'd actually flog like the club. I'd get a cat of nine tails. I'd flog the club, like physically whip the club. Like, I'd go to the stadium and start whacking it. I would not accept a bid of that.
For you, what sort of cash plus player deal would you be willing to take from City?
120 million and Laporte.
That's literally what I was thinking. Yeah, I'm the same.
10 million and De Bruyne.
Would you take 100? And Laporte.
Stretch.
Yes.
Stretch.
Yes.
It has to be a negotiation.
I don't think they offer that anyway, so it don't matter. But I don't know. I think if it could be worth looking into if they really wanted to get him. But I think for the players that we're going to want to take from City, I don't think they're going to want to come to Spurs. So I just.
It literally have to be like 100 million, like Rodri or something like that. For me, season
They'll probably offer Zinchenko or something.
Oh, God.
I don't mind Zinchenko, but like, no. Like, we have.
It's true, though. Like, it'll be like 120 million and Mendy.
Oh, my God. This is depressing me. Nah, we can't let him go for this kind of money. I feel like we have to. Because I was just thinking about it, like,
Mendy is an exploded knee.
Say we sell Kane for 150, yeah, like, and we wanted to get Grealish would be like 80 to 100 million. So like, if Grealish is 80 to 100 million, then surely Kane is worth way more than 150 if you're actually just comparing players. I think, like, I think he's being undervalued. I think 150 is not enough. Basically,
how much should you buy Lewandowski for?
No, he's quite old though, isn't he?
80. Yeah. But how much older is he than Kane?
I think he's 31, maybe 32.
So do you think, like, those three, let's say 3 years, are they worth 100 million more?
Yeah, they are. They are. There is prime years.
I think the thing with
I think Kane is going to play for another 10 years.
Yes, I think Kane can adapt to losing pace, and it depends how bad his injuries get. If his injuries don't get as bad as what we're all fearing, then he can definitely play for another 10 years. He's that sort of player who can adapt to. I mean, he's not exactly quick at the moment, but even if he did lose more pace, he could definitely drop back. He could start playing as a 10, or he could still play as a 9 anyway. You don't necessarily have to be super quick to play as a 9.
You're at ask.
He just has everything. I think he's even said himself. He feels like his peak is going to come in the next 5 years.
Yeah, but he also thinks he's worth 100 million and gym should be optional for footballers, so I don't listen to what he says anymore. Yeah. He's a good footballer, but...
I can't lie.
He was on a Prince Andrew flex. And Gary Neville. He was going to start saying that he couldn't sweat anymore. Just talking absolute nonsense.
No, that was a car crash interview. I really can't lie. Like, the reports that Levy was furious at the interview, I wouldn't have cared if it wasn't about Kane leaving. The actual content was pish.
Yeah, the content was terrible. And
rubbish.
The fact that he allowed Gary Neville to sort of, like, wangle his team, like, oh, if I put within 4 feet of this, I'll ask you any question. Is that so United? Just putting the ideas in his head.
He's low-key mocking us, isn't he?
He's worth 100 million is a joke.
He's low-key
the cheek of it for Sky Sports to also be like on the weekend, so yesterday, the cheek of it for Michael Richards to be like, yeah, is it not disrespectful to flog Harry Kane? Bro, if you're working for the company that I do, Gary Lineker's right next to you. And Gary Lineker's like, at no point in our interview did I say that, did Kane say he's leaving? I'm like, bruv, you're literally putting him up for sale. Gary Neville was doing up estate agent. And he's trying to say that, yeah, I wasn't selling him in that interview. Bruv, he was literally saying, United, how much?
Yeah.
How much? He's doing up prime real estate.
Where did that interview take place? That wasn't at the Spurs training ground, was it?
There's golf course.
I haven't even watched it. It was too depressing, but... I don't know. I still think Kane, I think it's more likely that he stays than goes this season. I still think that, personally.
I disagree. I think I'm the only one that disagrees. I think he's gone.
That's fair. We shall see.
It depends on how much he pushes for it, I reckon.
Yeah,
if between now and the Euros, he definitively comes out and says, I want to leave, he's gone. He's gone this summer.
Yeah.
I think but if he doesn't, and the longer it drags on, he's not going to leave.
I think he said to Levy that he wants to leave. I think he said that to him. I think he said he just doesn't want to come out into the media and be like, I want to leave, because he doesn't want to disrespect the Spurs fans.
You already disrespected them.
Yeah, he's disrespected us so much, man. Honestly, in that game, I was swearing at him bare. I can't lie.
When he was for an hour on an interview. Come on, man.
It's been so disrespectful. I'm honestly shocked at the way he's conducted himself.
It's been such an aggressive move. And we talk about, I know this is kind of going off point, we do want to talk about managers briefly towards the end, but like it's not like we harp on about people like Raiola, like basically essentially being like Pogba wants to leave and saying stuff like that, and like my player wants better wages, my player wants to move to this club, my player loves Spain or something like that. And we talk about that, and I think it's just because Raiola is basically a supervillain. It's not. Yes. It's easy to call him a parasite and what have you, because he embraces that. Whereas what Kane's team have been doing is the same thing. They've been flogging their player. They put him on the market without really like essentially. They put him on the market. Let's fall. Flash real estate agent thing, this metaphor. They put him on the market without asking the homeowner whether they want to sell or not. That's literally what they've been doing. And they're listening to offers, and the homeowner is thinking, hold on a second, we have the lease on this property. Like they should be negotiating with us. You shouldn't be going out and be like, I want to buy this property. So it makes it. I'm not calling human, you know, Harry Kane like. And a property or something. He's not an object. Obviously, he's a human who has human desires and he'll want to have a legacy. But, you know, like you're contracted to a club, and a degree of professionalism would have been nice for a club that have stood by him through a lot. He went on several loans. He could have been cut from Spurs a long time ago. We stuck through with him. Obviously, we saw talent in him, but we gave him the opportunity. So a bit of professionalism would have been nice.
I think they just know that, like, Levy's going to demand so much money. So they need to make it as toxic as possible to even have a chance of going. Like, the fact that we're even talking about 120 million, I don't think we would be saying that number if Kane hadn't done this in public. I think we would be saying like 200 million, 180 minimum. I think it's like they know that they're not going to get this move if they play nice. Like they're going to have to be horrible. And it is horrible. It's just disappointing, man. Like, yeah, it's like I said last week on the pod, like when I heard Chelsea were in the conversation, I was just thinking, God, man, like you've really like dropped to some deep levels, honestly. But yeah, I think we should cover the new managers potentially coming in. So we had Alistair Gold reporting earlier that Spurs were going to be financially challenged by the new appointment. And The Athletic are saying that it's going to be between Ten Hag and Rangnick. Now, out of those two, who are you guys favouring?
I personally would prefer Ten Hag, but we need a director of football. I'm not having Steve Hitchin or whatever that clown's name is being in charge of 200 million that we're going to raise this summer from the Deadwood players and maybe Kane. Like, if you put him in charge of that 200 million, he's going to buy Jesus for 50 million. That's not my life. They'll offer Jesus in like 120 million or something. And then he'll go, nah, don't want that. They offer 120 million, and then he buys Jesus for 50 million. He'll do something stupid like that. We need a director of football and Ten Hag or Rangnick and give him all the control he wants. But Levy's never going to do that. So I think the best option's Ten Hag and a director of football.
Both of them.
Nah, they don't go together. Like, Ten Hag plays like possession football and Rangnick's just like a mad scientist of game.
I'm only joking. Like, of course they wouldn't work, but like Glenn said, we desperately need a director of football. So whoever we bring in, they need to have the power to either dictate what we buy, who we buy. They need to have that control, or yeah, it needs to be Ten Hag and a director of football.
Yeah.
So it's massive. Recruitment is huge this summer.
Mm. I don't think it'll be either of them. I think it's going to be Potter, personally. I can't see where that comment with regards to it testing our financial resolve comes into play with Rangnick, considering he's not at a club already. I guess he's sort of overseeing the whole Red Bull thing, but yeah, Potter's got a longer contract. I think Brighton have said themselves that they're definitely not letting him go. So I think it could be him. I think that could be the one they're talking about. I also think that they still think they've got a chance of getting Rodgers, which we just need to fucking give it up by now. I don't know how many times the guy's got to say he don't want to go anywhere.
Like, did you hear him? He said he's 200% not going. I think we have more chance of getting Poch back than getting Rodgers.
Oh, no, by the way.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
It could happen.
Well, no, but the thing is, Poch wouldn't be a financial disaster because he only signed a 1 year contract with PSG, and I think out of all the managers that we've been linked with, Potter and Ten Hag would be the most we'd have to pay for compensation. Ten Hag obviously because because of the 1 year extension, and Potter because he's on a 3 year contract at the moment, I believe. So and Brighton very much don't want to let go of probably the best manager
there. But they can't be paying him that much. Like, they kind of took a risk bringing him in.
It's not a lot. It's like 1 million. But it's still that compensation to the club because he's under contract.
And can't clubs now demand fees for managers? They didn't buy him pay Leipzig something like 30 million for Nagelsmann.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't think it will be Ten Hag because I remember when he signed that contract extension, the way he was talking was like he was certain he was staying there.
He also had that talk with Spurs as well.
Exactly. Which they said that it wasn't a positive meeting, which obviously I don't know what that means, but I don't know if they would then go back in for him. I personally think it will be Potter.
Hansi Flick.
He's basically done. That Germany deal is basically done.
He keeps popping up again.
Nah, he basically said, everyone knows I'm going Germany, innit? Why don't you just retire early? Let me do the Euro.
That's what he's saying. Nah, it's just teasing me the amount it just suddenly comes up out of nowhere.
Said like, he respected the agreement as well that he's got with Germany or something like that.
I'm just dreaming that the financial resolve will be about like, because we're going to have to pay them compensation. Like maybe we have to pay like German football compensation or something. Like that would just
Martinez.
I also saw Lopetegui could be one of the options because they the reports coming out as well have been that candidates have come in like over the past few days, strong candidates that obviously none of us really know about yet. So maybe Lopetegui, I don't know who else. Glasner maybe.
It just seems like a weird headline, the financial resolve thing. Like yeah. It needs people to believe that it has to be a manager under contract. But yeah. Like it also could mean that the managers that they're looking at are managers that want to spend. It's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, I mean, I've said to my dad yesterday, I think any appointment is going to be slightly underwhelming unless it's Ranić, and I think that's the fantasy choice for me. Like yeah. I know he's in like the major publications, but like Ranić with the amount of control that he'd want and the amount of control that he needs to turn Tottenham around is like the fantasy choice. And I think anything other than that is going to be slightly underwhelming.
And I think even with that, like we like Ranić, but I feel like some of our like older fans and some fans will never have heard of him, and they'll find that underwhelming. I think no matter who we get in, some section of the fans are going to find it underwhelming pretty much. Yeah, I think that's...
Glenn wants us to bring Ancelotti in.
No, he wouldn't want to hurt Everton. He wouldn't want to hurt Everton,
man. Oh, yeah, Dunk. Big Dunk. My bad.
I thought we genuinely got for a whole podcast without mentioning
it. To be fair, you know when we were talking about selling Kane, I was thinking selling Kane also means that it's another homegrown player that we've lost. So,
oh, my God, yeah. I was thinking
DCL,
that as well.
DCL, that's real place.
I'd love it. He's my boy. I love him.
It definitely means Ings. 100% means Ings.
Yeah, possibly.
I wouldn't mind Ings. I think Ings, especially in a Ranić team. Even if it's not Ranić, I think it could be a good way to keep Bale in the team because Ings will press from the front, and then you have Bale more able to do his thing in terms of like just not really tracking back, like doing what he does,
not do a lot.
I also think it's the thing as well that. Because we've had Kane for so long, we've become so conditioned to like thinking we need a 30 goal a season striker, which obviously is like a key thing to be where we want to be. But I think if you invest that money in building the whole squad and making the team better as a unit, and you can get goals from all over the pitch, then it's not as big a problem. Someone like Ings will still get you 20. But then you bring in other players for the system that are going to chip in more goals, more assists.
Yeah, I also think that you can look at City as an example. Gundogan was their top goal scorer this season with 13 goals in the league. So that just shows how distributed the goals were over the team. And they still scored the most goals in the league this season. And their top goal scorer was 13, had 13.
I was going to mention Chelsea as well, who didn't score a lot of goals but came fourth. But like, I don't know if you saw Match of the Day, they put up their top scorers. Mate, I was so shocked.
Tammy Abraham, wasn't it?
No, Jorginho on 7 goals, followed by Mount on 6, and some other like, it was like Zuma on 5. Like, it was honestly like, it was like a relegation team. Like, it was putting up like their top scorers of a relegation team, but like. I couldn't believe it. It was a crazy stat, but like that goes to show that you can get in the top four without having like a 30 goal a season striker. But then again, it is a big problem for them.
They also don't concede. Like Chelsea just didn't concede for a while. Like when Tuchel came in, there was like almost like a 10 game streak where they like conceded maybe 2 goals. And when you score one and concede none, as Michael Owen would point out, you know, goals win games. So there you go. you score them on one end, you keep them at the other end, you're going to win games.
can't argue with that. On that wisdom, I think we're going to have to leave it there. But yeah, thanks for joining us, and yeah, thanks for joining me, boys.
Cheers. Safe.